ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this morning we are reading from 5th canto, chapter 8, entitled The Character of Bharat Maharaj, text 22. Since the text is in the prose, we'll just read it. And then we'll read word by word. Ashadita Havishi Bar Hishi Dushite Mayo Palabdo Bita Sapadi Upa Rata Rasa Rishi Kumara Ravad Avahita Karanam Kalpana Aste. Okay, word by word. Asadita, placed. Havishi, all the ingredients to be offered in the sacrifice. Barhishi, on the kusha grass. Dushite, when polluted. Maya upalabdaham, being scalded by me. Bhita bhitaham, in great fear. Sapadi, immediately. Uparatara saham, stopped its playing. Rishi Kumaravat, exactly like the son or disciple of a saintly person. Avahita, completely restrained. Karanakalpaham, all the senses. Aste, sits. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When I placed all the sacrificial ingredients on the kusha grass, the deer, when playing, would touch the grass with its teeth and thus pollute it. When I chastised the deer by pushing it away, it would immediately become fearful and sit down motionless, exactly like the son of a saintly person. Thus it would stop its play. Purport. Bharat Maharaj was constantly thinking of the activities of the deer, forgetting that such meditation and aversion of attention was killing his progress in spiritual achievement. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyade Shitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So translation one more time. When I placed all the sacrificial ingredients on the kusha grass, the deer while playing would touch the grass with its teeth and thus pollute it. When I chastised the deer by pushing it away, it would immediately become fearful and sit down motionless, exactly like the son of a saintly person. Thus it would stop its play. So here we are hearing the continuous narration of the activities of Bharat Maharaj. And explanation or essentially description of his affection towards that deer. that he, we may say in a sense, adopted. The deer here is compared, he himself is comparing it to a son of a saintly person. As a lot of correlation here we can see between that particular deer or the emotions that Bharat Maharaj exhibited here and the emotions that someone will exhibit towards the children, or in particular towards somebody who is dependent on them, like a father towards its son. That deer would play here very enchantingly, so that Bharat Maharaj definitely was attracted towards it. And we know when children play, or when children speak sweet words, broken words, that everybody gets attracted. It sounds very interesting, sweet, unique, and very often everybody is attracted towards it. They think, oh, how nice. So Bharat Maharaj in a similar way got very much attracted towards that particular deer, because the deer was also very playful and seemingly here also very obedient. And that's something that somebody like father, for example, would expect for somebody who is dependent upon him. And that would he would consider to be very sweet, very, very nice. The deer here, like the children, in its play, of course, in its ignorance, so to say, when Bharat Maharaj was trying to perform his religious duties, it is described here, it would touch the grass, kusha grass, of course, definitely not for eating, as there must have been plenty of this fresh grass, and there is plenty of the fresh grass in the area around the Gandaki River. But just for the playing purposes, it would touch the grass and contaminate it. Bharat Maharaj would have been, and he was, very cautious and very considerate about his worshipping or spiritual activities. At least this is what he thought, that it's something still very important to continue. He didn't abandon altogether his ritualistic activities on the path of spiritual realization. So he was concerned that those kind of articles that he was utilizing were appropriate for the worship of his supreme, of the deity, or the supreme personality of Godhead, we may say. He didn't have the deity, but at least whatever meditation or sacrifices he would perform for the sake of pleasing the supreme personality of Godhead. So that deer is just like a child playing, and this is something that entangles Bharat Maharaj's mind more and more and more and more, brings him more, making him more affectionate towards that particular deer. So many lessons are here, as we've been hearing last practically weeks, about the activities of Bharat Maharaj. But one important one, that it's especially now we can relate it to our present day, that it's very, very difficult to remain spiritually focused while being in seclusion. That Maya essentially will present different kinds of temptations in front of us, which will definitely, undoubtedly divert us from the path of spiritual realization. So many different kinds of temptation Maya will offer in front of us. Of course, testing us whether we are really sincere in obtaining the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Coming back here to these wonderful stories in Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that they are here just to point out and enlighten us, essentially. Puranas are practical examples of something that is supposed to be understood through the Vedic scriptures. So these are the examples of the devotees who, practicing the essence of the religion, have been either advancing or having difficulties on their spiritual path, in order to guide us, in order to enlighten us, how we should be very, very cautious on the spiritual path. We know, we heard it earlier, it's like a razor's blade. So we have to be very careful. We shouldn't take it lightly. lightly. We shouldn't take it for granted. Because at any moment we may slip from that particular path. It says like Kali Yuga, walking on the path is like, when we clean the temple, we'll pour water. Maybe when there is Maha cleaning coming now, Gundicha temple. And I will put a lot of soap. We'll use the soap, we'll brush, we'll clean everything. So when you walk, you have to be real careful. Anyway, even now rainy season, we have those yellow signs. You know, be careful. Watch out. Floor is slippery. So in Kali Yuga, especially that path, spiritual path, is so slippery. Any moment we may fall down. Any moment we may divert our attention from something spiritual towards something that is not so spiritual. Might seem like that. So we have to be extremely cautious. Any moment. So this is how the situation, especially in Kali Yuga, is. Of course, Bharat Maharaj wasn't in Kali Yuga, but this is again lesson for us that especially at this particular moment or age, we have to be very, very careful. We may slip any moment. Of course, sometimes it's said that fall is a pillar of success. Falling down, fall is a pillar of success. That we can understand in some positive manner. Some kind of positive connotation might be behind that statement or a saying. But one interesting point was raised up by Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He said, falling down is not a sin. But once fallen, to remain down, this is what is sinful. So if you fall down, it's not sinful to fall down. But then being fallen, not to rise up again and remain down, such kind of condition. This is something that is sinful. So it may be constantly happening. Maybe on the gross level, maybe on the subtle level. There'll be so many temptations, so many difficulties. But it doesn't mean that we have to remain on that fallen condition. In that fallen condition. That means we have to rise up. Rise up again. Walk again. Krishna doesn't look, whether we really essentially achieve perfection by our endeavors or whatever. He's looking at our sincerity. How sincere we are to achieve Him. Are we really sincere? Do we really want Him? We might be falling so many times, but at least if we are sincere, we put all our effort into achieving, following His instruction, following His goal. This is what He is very pleased with. So we have to keep on striving towards the perfection. Even if we don't achieve it, Krishna definitely, or through spiritual master, they'll make sure that we remember Him at the moment, last moments of the life. Last snare of Maya, it is said that it's, like we said, many temptations will be there, many obstacles might be there, to actually purify us, completely purify us for any kind of different attachments, rather than attachment towards Krishna. So the last snare of Maya in general, there will be many, but the last one is to think that we ourselves are God. That we think, like Mayavadis for example. We've achieved some level of purity and some level of freedom from the three modes of material nature. But then that we start considering, oh, I myself, I am actually that supreme Brahman. That supreme person. Even if we think of a person kind of maybe. That is the last snare of Maya. But there will be many, many different kinds of snares of Maya. And Mayavadis in general, sometimes we see, okay, fine, they do some charity work. It seems like kind of they have some compassion. But in general, their hearts are pretty much hard-hearted. I mean, they are hard-hearted, pretty much. Because they're pretty much selfish and self-concerned. And whatever they do is just for their selfish purposes. So devotees are not like that. Devotees are very compassionate. Devotees are very soft-hearted. We heard para dukkha dukkhi. Somebody is sad, miserable. Devotees feel also similar. They're also feeling sad. They're also feeling miserable. They don't like seeing anybody in such kind of condition. Like to see everybody satisfied and happy. So they're soft-hearted. Sometimes, we come across beggars. Of course, we know it's a profession. nowadays, unfortunately. But again, sometimes it's not just good to just most often brush them away or whatever. Sometimes it's not bad. Srila Prabhupada also showed by his example, he would sometimes also give some coin. He would say, like, we are international society, you know, if we don't give, then what will people think? From various kinds of consideration. But he would say it keeps the heart soft to give sometimes. Of course, the best way is to give Krishna consciousness, that we know. If it's possible. To give prashara maybe. That's great. But to keep the heart soft. So here we see that Bharat Maharaj, he had that wonderful quality of compassion. He had a soft heart. He came across the situation when seemingly there was no any other option but to take care of that particular deer. There was no any other option. He had to do it. He had that much compassion. We've seen through the history and through the examples of the scriptures that devotees did have affection towards, you know, animals also. Like, for example, Sita. She also wanted, when they were in exile in Panchavati, when the Maricha came disguised as a deer. First, what Sita told to Lord Ramachandra, please capture that deer. We will have that deer as our pet in Ayodhya. We'll bring it to Ayodhya. She wanted to have the deer as a pet. But there's nothing wrong with that. She wanted the deer as a pet. Bharat Maharaj had it as a pet. So the same similar affection was shown. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, when he was a young boy, he was playing with the puppies. Of course, his mother chastised him. Like puppies, I mean, like the deer here touching the grass and polluting it with its mouth. So similarly, puppies are considered polluted, and therefore she would instruct Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not to play with them and to wash himself or even to take a bath. But there was that affection shown towards other living entities. And it's not that we shouldn't show affection towards other living entities, because we know they're all parts and parcels of Krishna. And at some point of time, they will also have to come to the level where they will have to develop, again, revive their relationship with Krishna. So if devotees can help them. That's why congregational chanting is said to be the most wonderful way of spiritual realization. Because not only we benefit, but everybody else who hears it benefits. Plants benefit. Animals benefit. Birds. Everybody. So those animals will also benefit. At least they'll get, if they get some prasadam also, it is understood, they will attain human form of life and they'll be able to continue spiritual practices. There's another example of Shivananda Sena, who also had shown some affection towards a dog. He threw some prasadam and dog became again very affectionate. There is no need much for the animals to become affectionate towards someone. We can see that. You just show little affection, you just show little love. And you bought their heart forever practically. They're yours. They become completely surrendered to you. So that dog also became very affectionate. And he followed them towards the Jagannath Puri. The whole group of the devotees. And then suddenly he disappeared and everybody was wondering. Just like Bharat Maharaj. Where is the dog? They became worried and affectionate. Where did the dog go on? Where did he go? Where did he disappear? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed that he went back home, back to Godhead. How did that happen? I don't remember. Doesn't matter. Or I don't think it's described. But devotees were affectionate. And the dog achieved perfection. But there is a slight difference, again, between the case of Bharat Maharaj and those cases. Like I said initially, it is very dangerous to be in a seclusion. To be in a seclusion, because there are so many traps that Maya will present in front of us and we might not ourselves be strong enough to overcome them. In a society or when there is a group of devotees living together, it's much easier. It's much easier. We will help each other. We'll point out to the faults. We'll point out to the false ego. We'll point out to so many different things that are the side tracks of Maya. Toward the spiritual path. Someone else will come and say, hey Prabhu, you know, you're so puffed up, or what is this, or what, you're doing this wrong, or you're doing that wrong. Whereas we will think, no, this is Krishna consciousness. This is how it should be done. Well, maybe it's not like that. And somebody else will put us back on the right track. Might be junior, so however, it might not be pleasing or whatever. But somehow or other, if you're really introspective, and we learn to appreciate whatever comments might be there, but we will see that it's actually helpful. It's very helpful in spiritual life. So seclusion, it's not so favorable thing. And here also, like this deer has been compared to a child. Children also might be, Prabhupada said, of course, these are to the grihasthas, he said, these are your deities. Don't worry about worship or anything. Children are your deities. You made them Krishna conscious and you'll go back home, back to God. These are your deities. You have to take first care of them. But it might be very distracting. It's not easy. And you know, so many troubles and difficulties might be there on the path of raising them up in Krishna consciousness. So many distractions again. So it might be very, very difficult. Especially the affection that is then shown towards them. And they might not even reciprocate it. And so many various kinds of things. So it's dangerous. But the worst thing is if somebody thinks that I can advance spiritually by my own strength. This is the worst thing. That we think that we are powerful enough, we are confident enough, then we can do it. We don't have to live in association of devotees. We don't have to hear anybody's, you know, pointing finger to me. We don't have to, you know, listen to any criticism. We don't have to listen to somebody else, like some other authority. I myself, I'm authority for myself. I'll go to Radhakund or whatever. I'll be my own authority and I'll practice spiritual life independently. It's very dangerous. Very dangerous. This is like you try to reach some destination. And this is how it is compared to that in this Kali Yuga age, the path. Now we are on the path, fine. Everybody may be on the path. But say you have buses running towards a particular destination and you have your own car. Now when the bus is running, bus will stop at a particular places just to pick up more passengers. That's all. In general, he has his own route where it's going. It won't deviate unless there is some work happening. But again, he'll come back, whatever. So once you're in the bus, you don't have much independence. You're in the bus. You may do all kinds of things in bus. Fine. That's okay. But you're on your way, destined way. But if you have your own car, and say in your own car, anyway, say we have a, you have kind of a family or whatever, and some kids like that deer, they will look at different shopping malls and say, wow, daddy, daddy, I want that stuff. Or I want, you know, this. Or the wife will say, I want that. Or maybe we should go seeing something here. Oh, there's a nice park there. Or, I don't know, that makes, I don't know, all this, you know, there's so many kinds of things like that. And then you will stop and make a break. You'll say, okay, fine, we'll make a break. Let's go and check that out. Let's see how this looks like. Or maybe we'll buy something. So you may sidetrack. So many distractions will be there. So that's the danger when you have the opportunity, when you have such kind of independence, so to say, to travel on your spiritual path independently. It's a dangerous. And we may sidetrack. We may lose the time. Definitely we'll lose the time. And we might get diverted. We may completely forget about the path. You know, you kind of decide to go to some particular place, but then you get diverted and then you lost your time. Then you might decide, maybe we should come back. We shouldn't go there, you know, now it's late or whatever. There's so many things. I was trying to expand the analogy. So it might not be so easy, but once you're in the bus, you don't have a choice. Once you're in ashram, you don't have a choice. That process is leading you towards one particular direction. You don't have a choice. I mean, your choice is to remain in the bus. You can get out on any station. That's fine. Like anybody can up on any station in the bus. That's fine. But at least that bus is, you know, destined in a particular way to some particular destination. So it's much easier. And especially here in Kali Yuga, it's much easier to be together with the devotees, not in some particular secluded place and try to practice spiritual life individually. It's very difficult. It can be very, very distracting like this. And nobody else will point out, hey, you know, maybe you're not doing something that should be done. There is nobody there to correct us. Of course, we know Bharat Maharaj was on the platform of Bhava. But there are two levels of Bhava. And he wasn't on the higher stage, he was on the lower one. From where he fell. He fell down. Said it Chitraketu also. There are two examples of the personalities. King Chitraketu. He was also on the level of Bhava. But he fell down from that particular platform. So, as I pointed out, even if somebody falls down, he shouldn't remain fallen. He should rise up and keep on going. There's no sin in falling, but in remaining fallen. So we should keep on striving further, further, in spite of all the obstacles and difficulties that we might come across. So it's not easy again, but it's easier if we're in association of those who practice the same thing. Not to be, you know, like independent. That is very dangerous. So Bharat Maharaj had that affection. And for us also, it's a very great difficulty. As I said, devotees are soft-hearted. They don't like seeing others being in trouble or suffering. They're naturally compassionate. So what would we do in such kind of situation? That is the question. That we have to place ourselves, because we do find ourselves very often in such situations. What would we do? Once I didn't have a choice, but it was one interesting incident. When I was in Kopargan last year, at some programs there with the college boys. And then I was coming back to Mumbai, and I was leaving from Manmad, which is an hour, a little more than an hour and a half away from Kopargan. So that only train was available, so I couldn't get it directly from Kopargan. Anyway, so one devotee had to drive me on a bike towards Manmad, and takes 1.5 hours on a bike. And that early in the morning, the train was around 6 a.m. and we had to start around little 3:30. Had to get up and get ready. And in the dark, we were, you know, driving towards the Manmad. And as we passed, there are different roads, like even some field roads to get to the main road. And as we were going to one road, I just heard some crying. Just from a distance, we were on the bike, and I heard some like crying, really pitiable crying. It was like, really, wow, what's going on? It's dark, it's completely dark. And you think, wow, what's going on? You know, it's like really, that doesn't sound very nice at all. It sounds horrible. And the sound was, as we were kind of going further and further, the sound was increasing. And of course, we were on the bike and we were like pretty fast. But then at some point, as the bike was going on and the lights were focused on the road, we saw on the road there was a small puppy. Small puppy, maybe 1 or 2 days old. That's all. 1 or 2 days old. And it was crying like anything. And it just broke my heart. It was like really, I really felt horrible. What is this puppy in the middle of the night doing in the middle of nowhere? It was horrible. But just as I was thinking like this, we just passed through. We just passed through. So there was nothing to be done. I don't know if that devotee was driving saw the puppy. I couldn't even speak anything. I saw him. He was there on the road. He was crying. Small puppy, like 1 or 2 days old. So what would you do? I mean, what can you do? Such a, you know, like Bharat Maharaj almost. You know, what, bring it to temple? You can't do that. I mean, it's like anyway, we didn't stop. And we just keep on going. And then little later on, I saw some houses. So what happens in general, people who don't want puppies, you know, they just dump them out. Horrible. I mean, just they put them on the field, on the road. Sometimes in the West, I heard, you know, people drown them or whatever. They don't want to take responsibilities. They do all kinds of simple, horrible activities. So that it's not that there is no compassion. I mean, but how do you, you know, what do you do in such situations? It's like sometimes you can't even do much anyway. I was thinking also, my God, what kind of karma that puppy must be having, you know, it's horrible. He was crying like any, just imagine, you don't even see, you can't even see, you know, 1 or 2, 3 days maybe old, crying, you know, hungry. You can't see, there's nobody around, you're alone. Whom must have he abandoned in his previous life? I don't know, at least that's what I thought. What a heavy karma, you know. Of course, we shouldn't think like that, it's his karma, who cares, you know. That's again hard-hearted. You see somebody suffering, if we can, we should help. But it was such a horrible situation. And so many times it happens. So I don't know, what do you think, what to do? What would you do? Somebody needs a help. And to which extent do we get involved in that? That's the question. Like one thing that came to my mind, when there were those like sadhus crossing the river and there was that lady, pregnant lady, she wanted to cross the river. You know that example? And then what sadhu just took her on her shoulder, whatever, crossed the river, left her there and went on. And then the other one started complaining, how could you do that? Anyway, you know the story. And then later on he said, well, you know, I was carrying her for, you know, 5 minutes maybe, you know, but you're carrying her last 1.5 hours, you know. I mean, more attachment was created in the mind in the case of the other one than in the case of the first one or whatever. So sometimes there might be some situation where we shouldn't decline to help. We can help, but it's not that, you know, lifetime eternally, you know, you should remain attached to one particular person or a situation. That's the idea. You help as much as you can. You bring it to the point where it can at least, you know, like it's saying goes, like stand on its own legs, or to someone who can take care of it. It might not be our duty necessary. Bharat Maharaj, what could have he done? Of course, it's difficult in the forest. I don't know. Might have taken little trouble bringing the deer to someone else who might be taking care of it, or whatever. I don't know. That we can speculate about. But to remain attached to it and just wasting all of his, you know, it's like here it's mentioned in the verse itself. That Prabhupada states in the purport, it said that forgetting that, you know, constantly thinking of the activities of the deer, forgetting that such meditation and diversion of attention was killing his progress in spiritual life. He was not aware of that. There was nobody to tell him. He thought it's all fine. We'll do, you know, me and deer, we'll do spiritual life together. No problem. We'll advance together. But it was so dangerous. Very distracting. This is like that verse in Ishopanishad, Atmaha. The killer of the soul, whoever he might be. The killer of the soul means if we don't utilize our human life completely for the spiritual purposes and we divert it towards some other kind of materialistic activities, we get diverted. So it's a very, very slippy, like we've said in the beginning, very slippy ground for walking on that particular path. A lot of diversions. Very difficult. So we have to, you know, be in association of others. Here again, in our practical experience, we see that very often we also have to deal with different kinds of problems, especially if some senior devotees, if they're acting as counselors, trying to counsel others. The problem is when we take somebody else's problem and that problem becomes our problem. That's something that it shouldn't happen. Like deer's problem became a Bharat Maharaj's problem. He got affected to it. He fell down. So when we counsel others, their problems shouldn't become our problems. We have to be very careful. We have to do everything the best, sure, to help them get out of it, but not that it becomes our problem. It's especially in different kinds of relationships. Sometimes people may think you're siding with someone or whatever, or there are so many different kinds of side effects that might happen through different kinds of problems that we might get involved with. Another point is that somebody has, say, financial problems. I have two cases I just know of the devotees who helped in such a way, in a big way. And there somebody else's problem became their problem. I mean, it's a very deep topic now, but there are a lot of distractions like this. We have to be careful, but especially in terms of relationships, especially in terms of counseling. Say, if every disciple comes to Guru and dump his problem on him, saying, okay, now you solve it, you know, what will happen? It's impossible. We have to deal with our own problems. Of course, we definitely have to take advice, but we have to learn how to deal with our own problems. So there are different kinds of affections. And it's not that being compassionate, affectionate is something wrong. No. It's a very desirable quality of a devotee, of a Vaishnava. It's a very desirable quality. Once Srila Prabhupada was in Mauritius, and one man asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, you know, Arjuna, Krishna taught him, Krishna gave him the highest knowledge. And Krishna and taught him how to live above the death, how to accept everything beyond the death. So how come Arjuna, later on when the battle of Kurukshetra took place, when his son was killed, how come he was so shattered? How come he was so sad? How come he was so affected? Krishna told him the highest knowledge, that we are the spirit soul, we are not these bodies. So how could Arjuna be so affected after Abhimanyu was killed? And then Prabhupada replied, he said, there's nothing wrong with being affected. It's a natural course in any kind of relationship. But the real test, real proof that Arjuna was Krishna conscious, that Arjuna didn't, that he followed Krishna's instructions, that was that he still continued following whatever Krishna told him. He continued doing his duty. He continued serving Krishna. He might have shown affection. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not like I said earlier, we are hard-hearted. There is no affection towards anyone. No. He was still affectionate. He displayed that sadness because he lost somebody who was very dear to him. But he didn't sway away because of that. He continued being on the path and following Krishna's instructions. That's the proof that actually he understood Krishna's instructions. And he imbibed them. Another example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Haridas Thakur, when he passed away. There was mixed feeling of emotions, sadness and happiness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu organized a big feast because there was so much affection, of course. So it's not that there are no emotions in spiritual life. That's wrong. But it doesn't mean that they have to sway us away from the spiritual path. That's where we have to be careful. That affection. How to deal with affectionate situations. Devotees are also like gopis. Gopis are the best example of affection towards Krishna. They're the best example. And they complain that Krishna has no any affection towards them. When Krishna leaves them in separation, they feel like dead. Like dead. Completely lifeless. But when Krishna comes back, Krishna returns, reappears, then they feel like the life air had come back. So they abandon everything. They did abandon everything for Krishna's sake. You know, house, home, children, husbands, relatives, everything. And then Krishna disappears from the rasa dance. And they feel horrible. I said, this Krishna, this doesn't reciprocate our love at all. What kind of person he is? So we'll make him admit that he actually really doesn't reciprocate us. So they very thoughtfully and intelligently came up with three questions and requested Krishna to answer them. They said, they hope that Krishna will admit now that he really doesn't reciprocate their love. So they asked Krishna, they said, Krishna, there are three kinds of persons displaying different kinds of affections. One kind is the one who equally reciprocates the affection shown towards him. That means whatever he receives, he reciprocates to the same extent back towards that particular other person. And another one is, even though somebody who is filled with affection towards everyone, but the other person doesn't reciprocate to that, to him, and it may even be indifferent or inimical, but still that person shows the affection towards that inimical, indifferent person. That's the second kind. And third kind is, he said, that somebody who is completely ungrateful actually, even though somebody either shows the love towards him or affection, or it doesn't show love and affection towards him, is completely, it doesn't reciprocate at all whatsoever. And the gopis were taught, they were hoping that Krishna will fit in that third category. And they want him to admit that, himself personally. So then they requested Krishna to reply on those three questions, three different kinds of ways. So then Krishna took the first example and he said, definitely those who are reciprocating only love, which kind of they receive in an equal amount. Actually, he said they're like businessmen. They're just looking for their own profit in a sense. Just how to, you know, balance things. And they don't want to give anything more. whatever they receive, that much they will reciprocate. They're just looking for their own interests, actually. And he said those kind of personalities are actually like, they're not real friends. They're not true friends, and they don't really follow the true principles of religion. So Krishna didn't like to put himself in that category, definitely avoided that. So these are not real true principles of friendship. And he said they're like a businessman. Or they're like politicians. Whenever there is some interest, they will get together, government coalition or this and that, and for sake of some particular interest, anyway, I don't want to get there, thousands of examples, very interesting examples, but anyway, they'll just get together for sake of some particular interest, and that's it. There's no real friendship there. So that's how Krishna described that first example. And then the second one, that somebody who is affectionate towards others, although others might be inimical or indifferent towards him. He said that's a very wonderful personality, actually. And Krishna explained that those kinds of person definitely had a lot of love and affection, and they should be praised, and these are the real true path of religion. And he gave there two types. He explained even there are two types, two kinds of persons like that. He said one of those is the ones who are merciful, and another one is just who are naturally affectionate. Like merciful, like those like Prahlad Maharaj, you know. Take all the sufferings of the whole world on myself, you know, for everybody else I'm ready to suffer. Or Nityananda Prabhu. Anyway, we know those. I don't have to elaborate. So Prahlad Maharaj or Nityananda Prabhu, they're ready to suffer for everybody. They're ready to take all of their sinful activities so that everybody else can get liberated. So that's the example of being very merciful towards others, in spite of others being inimical or indifferent. Like we know what Jagga and Madai did there. So in spite of that. And another case, somebody who is very affectionate by nature, like parents towards children. Children may not appreciate whatever parents do for them or acknowledge or whatever, but still parents will serve them and try to raise them up. And still they give so much love and affection. So that's natural. So that type of category, that's how Krishna described it. And then there was a third one, the ones who are ungrateful. Those who are ungrateful, even for those who love them or even for those who don't love them. They just don't care. They just don't show any affection whatsoever. So Krishna categorized them as four types. He said, first one, it's Atmarama. One who is self-satisfied, who doesn't need anybody else, essentially. He just by himself, it's full of happiness and satisfaction. We know that, Atmarama. Self-satisfied, fully spiritually realized person. Second one, I have to hurry up a little bit, but so just quickly we'll cover. Second one is Aptakama, who doesn't have any other desire, because his desires are already fulfilled. Like say someone who is hungry but have been eaten and now he's satisfied. If you offer him some more, he will refuse. He won't accept it. Why? Because he's satisfied already. He doesn't need any more. So like somebody you may say, like gopis are trying to feed Krishna, like maybe he received enough from us, so that's why he is not reciprocating. Enough love from us. So like somebody who is like that, fully satisfied, satiated. So that's why he doesn't reciprocate. And then the third category, a little worse one, is Aptagya. Aptagya category. That means ones who is ungrateful itself towards whatever had been done. And the last one is Guru Darbas, Daraha, something like this, a Sanskrit word. The one who is like a killer of a guru, who doesn't appreciate anything that any person does for them. And actually they become very inimical towards them. Very inimical. In spite of whatever any person does for them. So then Krishna, definitely he didn't fit in the first two categories. He rejected those both. And gopis agreed, fine, he doesn't fit in the first two. But then maybe he fits in the third category. That means ungrateful. Krishna, he doesn't acknowledge whatever service and love we show and affection towards him. So he must be fitting in the third category at least. But then Krishna rejected that idea, counteracted, so to say, pointing out that actually, no, I do reciprocate, but just not immediately. I do reciprocate your love, but just not immediately. I just keep you in, I'm keeping you in separation so that your love and affection can actually increase even more. He said, like somebody who is a poor man, he gave example. Like someone who is a poor man, and somehow through great difficulties, he comes across some treasure. And that, you know, he becomes so enamored by that treasure and so happy about it. Because that's something most wonderful that can happen in his life. But then suddenly he loses it. And he laments greatly and he constantly thinks about it. Day and night, he can't eat, he can't sleep, he can't do anything. He just constantly focuses on that object of affection that he had lost. Or like we would sometimes, when we lose B-bag, our japa, we are not careful when we chant, but still we know how much it means when we can't find it. Ever lost your B-bag? Try to figure out where it is. How much focus is there? You can't eat, you can't sleep. Of course, if you value it, I hope we do. Immediately become focused. So Krishna said it's like that. It's not that I don't reciprocate. It just takes some time. But still, gopis didn't agree with that. So they said he must be in the fourth category. He must be completely, you know, like killer of the guru. Somebody who doesn't reciprocate at all whatsoever. So that they were trying to fit Krishna in that category. But the point is, Krishna also said that actually, what is the question, coming back to the previous one, what is the question of increasing gopis' love in separation when their love is already the most sublime, the highest type of love that anybody can achieve? So where is the question of increasing it? Like for some neophyte devotees, like say for us, if we have a relationship with Krishna and then we lose it, we know, hey, I have to strive more, I have to struggle more, I have to endeavor more, I have to do more and more service. I'm not qualified yet, that's why Krishna is not there. I lost it. You know, we chant, we get some realization or whatever, we worship deities, we get some, you know, whatever, thrills, we get some, you know, little symptoms of ecstasy, whatever, and then it's gone. We know, we have to strive more. That's in the case of the neophytes, not for the exalted devotees like gopis. So gopis rejected that. Where is the question of, you know, leaving us in separation? We already have so much love for you. So then the another option is actually how to understand why Krishna doesn't reciprocate is that Krishna actually wants to show the whole world what is the love of the gopis. What is their affection towards him? So that everybody knows what kind of level and what kind of symptoms they exhibit in that particular stage. This is how. And this is why Krishna does it. But then again, ultimate reason, I know it's little, there's so many levels here, but the ultimate reason why Krishna leaves the gopis actually, and why Krishna doesn't reciprocate in a way, because he can't do that. That's why he leaves. You know that famous verse, Naparayaham. I can't reciprocate, I can't repay you ever for the lifetimes altogether for your love. You've abandoned everything, everybody, for my sake. I can't repay you. So Krishna admitted defeat. I can't repay you for your love, your service. And he admitted that they have actually more love for him than what he has for them. This is why Krishna can't reciprocate actually. So there are those different kinds of affections the devotees show towards Krishna. So this is actually the affection that we should strive for. This is the affection where we have to get entangled with or about, whatever. So this is the type of affection we should really go for. Definitely in a perverted little bit way we get stuck here in this material, we're being affected towards somebody else. It's not wrong, we should do that, but not, you know, like those sage, you know, one of those sages, you know, carrying it for the long period of time. No, it should be temporarily fine. We do, we try to help others as much as we can, but we shouldn't get entangled. Somebody else's problem shouldn't become our problem. We should know how to tackle this. And we should remain steady on the path. And that's why, as I said, we live in a community, we live in association, we help each other. Not being independent and isolated. So these are the few lessons that we can learn from these pastimes of Bharat Maharaj. And of course, we have to remind ourselves over and over and over, because Maya will definitely always put some obstacles on our path of devotional service. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? No? Okay. Okay.
Guruji, attachment in respect to some object, apart from that, there may be attachment to some time, place, person.
Yeah, position, anything like that, yeah.
Like we enjoy some good time in past, and again it recurs to us, and we are attached to some place of our, say, native place or anything. So those are subtle attachments which others can't see. Yeah. That we are attached in our mind.
They can see. Guru can see what you're attached, what you're not attached. They can read you like an open book. Senior devotees will point out. They can see. It's not that nobody can see. Subtle attachments. Subtle attachments, it manifests through gross. Sooner or later it will manifest through something gross as well. You can't hide them forever. If you keep them carrying on, if you don't dwell on them, fine. But if you keep dwelling on them, they will force you to act on a gross level. Others will see that.
So affection should be kept subject to attachment to Lord Krishna.
Yeah.
Is it right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.